Welcome to church. Welcome to this place where we gather to live in all the struggles and all the graces, with all the desperation and the fears and intense, unspeakable joys. Welcome to this place of love and honesty and tradition and transformation. Welcome to this place of doubt. Welcome to this place of faith. We gather in gratitude for all that we share. We gather in generosity, and we gather in deep, clawing need, each for the other, and all together. What we do not know binds us on a journey of infinite wisdom. Come, let us worship together. We have lost two of our elders this week. Frank Pullian died last Sunday at 1:15. Irving Forbes died Wednesday at 7:30. It's a hard week of loss. It's a full week with loss and joy head over heels through the same days and the same hours, but memories are rich and the love is strong. Irving's memorial will be at 11 o'clock on Saturday, May 10th, at the Blue Hill Congregational Church. It was Frank's wish that there be no services in his memory, and we are honoring that wish. However, this evening at 7 o'clock, those who wish will gather back here at the church for an informal time of sharing of memories and stories and grief about them both. Please come, if you like, to talk, to listen, or just to be. And we are here and now, and in this time, on this morning, we light these candles in their memory. I invite you now into meditation. Get comfortable. Feel your feet against the soles of your shoes. Feel your shoes against the carpet. Feel the floors and beneath them the solid and graceful earth from which we come and to which we all will return. Feel your breath. Watch your breath as it slips in and out. Feel your heartbeat and the warmth of the blood in your veins. Let the grief and the joy mingle. Let us sit now for a few moments of silence in memoriam. Feel again your blood and your breath. Let the gratitude of life flow through your limbs. Feel the earth and your shoes, and once again return to your feet, every toe against the other. Feel your body in your chair. And I invite you now into this room, into this place and this time and this sanctuary. Let us gather ourselves in the spirit of meditation and prayer for words followed by silence. Oh, we cry out in grief today, and we cry out in joy. Let our voices be heard against the rocks of the mountains in the Connecticut Valley, on the sands and by the foxes of Peter's Cove. Let our weeping do something. Let our laughter mean something. Let the empty places in our midst bear witness to the space that each of us holds. Let memory seed the ground, let it lie fallow, and then and still and always in this season of Beltane, in these days of new beginnings, we know the green and growing things will creep in at the edges as they have for billions and billions of years. Let the soil then turn in the earthworm's patient grasp. Let the joys mingle with the sorrow, and may spring return. again. Our reading this morning comes to me from Reverend Kent Hemenseleska, a colleague in Minnesota. It is called Fault Line, and it is written by Robert B. Walsh. Did you ever think there might be a fault line passing underneath your living room, a place in which your life is lived in meeting and in separating, wondering and telling, unaware that just beneath you is the unseen seam of great plates that strain through time? And that your life, already spilling over the brim, could be invaded, sent off in a new direction, turned aside by forces you were warned about but not prepared for? Shelves could be spilled out, the level floor set at an angle in some seconds shaking. You would have to take your losses, do whatever must be done next. When the great plates slip and the earth shivers and the flaw is seen to lie in what you trusted most, look not to more solidity, to weighty slabs of concrete poured or strength of cantilevered beam to save the fractured order. Trust more the tensile strands of love that bend and stretch to hold you in the web of life that's often torn but always healing. There's your strength. The shifting plates, the rest of earth, your room, your precious life, they all proceed from love, the ground on which we walk together. Here ends the reading. Our community is bound together by the brass straps and cobwebs of life shared deeply, of growing relationship, of passionate faith, and of love. So bound together, so free, and so beloved, we must commit ourselves with deliberate gestures, tempted as we are by so many dear and wonderful things and causes and possibilities. We commit to Sunday morning as a practice. We commit our time and energy to the works of this church within and without our walls, and each week we set aside this time to practice once again giving our money to this community and the causes of our collective soul. Giving is itself a journey of knowledge, of possibility, of faith. In this time we embark on that journey together, seeking what wisdom it can offer us, traveling always in good company. The offering will now be given and received. If you are a first-time visitor, please let the plates pass you by, for your presence is your gift. For the generous gifts and the practice of giving, and for what these things make possible in our life together, we are deeply grateful. Sometimes everything happens at once. Sometimes births and deaths, beginnings and endings get entangled on their paths and arrive at once, anxious and busy and full. Or perhaps it is we who are anxious and busy and full. And we watch it happen and we know it will happen, but no matter what we do, the moment of impact is still stunning because force is force. That's just the way it is. We are here in the impact point with Beltane and an installation in Frank Pollyon's death and Irving Forbes' death, balanced on the one head of the one pin that is this moment, that is this day. We may be a little emotional. We may be a little unstable. We may be a little upset. We may be a little overwhelmed, or a lot. We may be our everything with a little more intensity as our own heartbeats rise to match the pace of the day that we have stepped into. Emotional overwhelm is normal and important and interesting, unless it's your own. Emotional overwhelm is frightening. Emotional overwhelm is intense. Emotional overwhelm cracks us wide open so then we can be transformed. We may not be ready. We might not have chosen change, but there it is, waiting on the doorstep. And it will wait until we come out. It can wait a very long time. And we know this. Deep in our bones, we can feel the change coming like a steamroller or a freight train, and we hope and we pray that it doesn't come now, not today, not please, not like this, take this cup away. But it comes. It comes anyway. And caught in the teeth of the life that we have and the life that we have grown to love, what can we do? What can we possibly do? Except breathe. Breathe deep and decide where the energy is leading us. There's only so much we can see. There's only so much we can know. There's only so much we can possibly understand or absorb. And when the basket is heaped full, it helps to know what for us is wheat and what is chaff. What will blow away in the wind and what will fall back to the threshing room floor to feed us, to nourish us, to move us eventually from this day forward. My Indian grandmother began sifting through her life before I really got to know her. Her days and nights, by the time I met her, followed the same practical pattern worn into the floor of her Mumbai apartment by her soft slippers over years and years of practice. Her clothes were basic. Her life was basic. But she was not depressed. She was happy. She was content. It was enough. I remember it clearly because it's hard for us, or it's hard for me, to embrace enough. Abundance and lack do their peculiar tango, but balance, sufficiency, limit, escape us. They escape us even when we should know them so well as we know our own five fingers and toes, as well as we know the face and skin of our lover and the footfall of our dear ones. They escape us even as we cry out for them, even as we find impossibilities in the dark with our shins and sing for some sweet relief, even as we pile our lives to the brim and then gaze in wonder and dismay as the stack unforms and slips once more into chaos, and we know we need rest. These are, after all, the major forces of our lives, of all life, chaos and rest. The whole world tends toward chaos and rest. That's what the scientists say. Order takes energy to maintain. Chaos is easier. Resting is easier. And whatever is easier is where we humans start. We are built for efficiency. Long, complex series of thoughts about eventual consequences are just not our thing. Just ask any high schooler. Sure, we can, but we don't wanna. And at first, we don't. As children, we tend to be wiggly, soft creatures and curious and endlessly caught in a state of wonder. If something is interesting, we investigate. If something is appealing, we go to it, taste it, touch it. If something isn't working for us, we reject it. We don't worry that great Aunt Bessie gave us that scratchy sweater that she made with her own hands. We don't worry that Dad spent hours making that pizza with the icky mushrooms in it. We know what we like, what we don't like, and we act accordingly. Following our impulses works. As we get older, though, we discover, much to our dismay, that there are other considerations. And we adjust accordingly. What is easiest becomes a compromise forged between our impulses and what we think we know the world wants. That's a lot of work, figuring out what everyone else wants so we can accommodate it. It certainly keeps us engaged and busy and involved, and for a while that seems important. We set aside impulse so we can grow into adulthood, get a job, have kids, get a permanent address, go back to church. In this stage, we often focus on our careers and families and everything else that requires intense and continuous social engagement. The secret to our happiness becomes connected to the secrets of everyone else's happiness. It's a big world out there, but the rewards are fabulous, the connections are rich and rewarding. We feel like there's a place in the world where we fit and where we belong. We feel like there are people we know and systems we are finally familiar with. We have a spot, and life is pretty good. And then somewhere in adulthood, many of us look around and notice something. We have all the stuff. We have the accessories, the accompaniments, the gadgets, the dishes, the furniture, everything we thought we were working so hard for. We have the people. We have families and friends and colleagues and bowling leagues. We've had the experiences. We've traveled places and seen things and tried jobs and cooked exotic foods and repaired sinks and rented apartments. We've checked it off, the whole list. And now what? Now what? The world seems unaccountably quiet, the air still. The persistent hum of the to-do list fades away with the last child's departure into adulthood or the first friend's death, and the question hangs there, bouncing slowly. Now what? There are ways in which our lives are very simple. We need food, we need energy, we need passion, and we need growth. If we are not growing, we are shrinking. If we are not eating, we are wasting away. We have spent a lifetime amassing the pieces of our lives, and at this turning point, whenever it arrives, we realize slowly or suddenly that we will be perfectly happy to stop someday. Unlike institutions, we humans have a short and visible life cycle, and if we live long enough, we all eventually decide that the closets are full. We are not inclined to seek out new things, new experiences, new friends. We have enough. We've seen enough, and it's enough. And enough is enough. We don't need any more. It will just end up in the woodshed or stuffed in the closets behind the knee walls. And really, who wants a new friend stuffed in the closet behind the knee wall? So we start reducing. We start backing off. We start stripping away. And the more we take off, the more we simplify, the more we reduce, the more uncomplicated we try to make things. It's hard to overcome that inertia of so many years of accumulative energy. But once we get started reducing, the reducing snowballs. In India, they have a whole system for understanding it. There's an expectation of certain life stages, and the last stage is asceticism, a stripped-down version of all the other living we've done. There is an understanding that it is spiritually rich at that point to give up certain foods, to simplify one's dress, to spend more time in prayer. No one expects this of young people. It's a life change that comes naturally with age or with proximity to death, so that it is not at all unusual for elders to sit quite still in prayer for long times each day, to eat the same foods for every meal, to have several sets of identical clothes. But in our fast-paced world, this stripping down doesn't have to come from age. In fact, the faster we live, the more we cram in, and we live longer, but we get full at the same rate. And at some point, we need a break. If we don't take one on our own, we get tired. And the more tired we are, the more streamlined we want our lives. We stop doing lots of extra things. We stop traveling so much. We stop maintaining vast and complex social networks. We also figure out how to take off our clothes near the washing machine, put away the dishes in the dish drainer, and make at most one trip to the grocery store all week. We don't necessarily call it simplicity, although voluntary simplicity is popular. We probably make excuses and act guilty. We probably blame it on our schedule or our health. But there's a truth that runs deeper. We just don't have time for all this. We need more focus, but we also need to do less. We have a focus diffusion habit. Focus is scary because some things, some days, some events are too big and too hard to handle head on. When the emotion is larger than human capacity, we want to redirect. Henry Nelson Wyman says that art gives us a side door, allowing us oblique access to the massive impact of major events, births and deaths, major triumphs and tragedies, without getting paralyzed. It's true, A good work of fiction or theater can let people experience just enough grief or joy to cause transformation without being mired by the power of reality. But art is not the only softener. If we reduce the number of things we're managing and simplify the management itself, then we reduce the total stress load on our lives and are more equipped to deal with what remains. There's no shame in knowing limits, and there's no shame in acting on that knowledge, even if it results in what some people call being lazy. There's a place where simplicity meets efficiency, where the most direct route is also the shortest and fastest, although not when you're driving in Maine, where what makes sense all the way around. It's not efficiency at the expense of health. It's not over-mechanization. It's the moment where everything falls into place and we're working in harmony with the rhythms of our environment and our own soft and precious bodies. And we come back to our instincts. We come back to those impulses. And age brings that more surely than anything else. Not getting older, but being older, old enough to have soaked up a lot of life's beauty and pain, being old enough to have seen a lot and survived it, being old enough to have a little poise and a little grace in the face of powerful obstacles, and being old enough to choose whether to use that poise and that grace for others' comfort or for one's own comfort. When we are truly elders, we might even be able to do both at once. But the path of least resistance is often the path of most truth. And any time we speak truth, we are bound to make someone uncomfortable. What's important is that if we are going to cause discomfort, that discomfort is a deliberate choice. That we have selected it because it is important, or because it carries a message, or because it forges a deeper connection or a better world. Discomfort is only useful when it is a means to an end. And when it is, it can be our brightest beacon. Our infants and our pets can educate us. Their unease is what says that they need something. Touch, solitude, diaper change, a walk, a hug. And their first impulse is to get that need met. We are powerfully trained from childhood to override our impulses, to subdue our needs, to set aside our truths. And that skill is useful, but it is limited. Eventually, no matter what you do, the bathroom calls more loudly than anything, and it must be answered. And those cycles shorten as we get older and remind us what is truly important and what cannot be ignored: our bodies, our spirits, our self-knowledge, our intuition, our wonder. When my dadi, my Indian grandmother, set aside fancy food and fancy clothing in her 88th year, she was not doing it for deprivation. She was doing it for simplicity and for depth, for the things that continued to matter, even as life got harder. As her flesh and bones continued to force her to choose, she chooses what she loves, what she needs, what fills her spirit, what strengthens her mind. Anything left is left behind. By now, it seems she must be floating a bit, skimming above the dust of the Mumbai streets in the dusk which frames her daily shopping. My mother's parents were the same, eating dry toast without butter and having simple conversations at the dining table, which now graces my kitchen. They were done with life, not fast, but slowly, with a measured grace that they strung out as long as they could. Our elders have this to teach, that what is important does not come from far away. In fact, most times it comes from within our towns, within our walls, within ourselves. What is important is that which we want to do despite the laziness or because of it. What is important is what we know makes our hearts sing. For Irving Forbes and Frank Pollyon, it was music and family and community and hard work and 100 things we may never know. For each of us, we are still learning, still finding, still listening, still telling the stories, still growing. May we embrace the gifts of community. May we embrace the gifts of connection. May we, in the company of others, become exquisitely lazy and thus exquisitely ourselves. Blessed be, and amen. Go now with the loss and the joy in your hearts. Go seeking the important things in your life, and love and beauty will find you. Go in peace and go in love.